please state your name and position for the record? We are being recorded. And just sort of let us know what your division does and some of the responsibilities. And we're all sort of new on this committee. And maybe if you get any ideas where you're headed or where the department is headed or where you'd like to be headed or any of the press.
Yeah, I'm Barbara Bassley, director of Pioneer Benefits.
I just wanted to give a special welcome to Barbara. She, having run the Fairbanks home before she came down to Juneau, good to see her.
Thank
you. We worked together several times over the years.
And I always appreciated your interest into the home. The Division of Pioneer Benefits operates Pioneer Homes, the six Pioneer Homes, which are located in Palmer, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau. And it also operates a longevity bonus program. The Pioneer Homes budget in 92 will be somewhere around $30 million. And the longevity bonus program, depending on what's going to happen with the program, anywhere from 55 to 62. The Pioneer Homes take care of around 570 residents. We have over 600 beds, but we have a number of vacant beds in the residential section. We recently, in August 90, the statute was changed to now require a need to come into the home. So it is definitely no longer just a retirement facility. It has become more of a healthcare facility. Residents like to stay in the community as long as possible, and we support that. So in residential area where we only have heavy-duty housekeeping and three meals a day, that type of service is no longer needed in the community. Our future plan is to convert those residential areas into assisted living. Assisted living means that it is not skilled nursing care, but that we have 24 hours a day a person, a nurse's aide, available to help people maybe dress, to help people if they're slightly confused, to make sure they go get to meals, help people with reminding themselves to take medications. They just cannot completely live by themselves anymore. They need a person to aid them. We have this type of service in three homes right now. We have in Sitka, in Palmer, and in Anchorage, and we have done that with available staff. These homes had a little bit more staff than the others, and they have increased their service by providing assisted living with existing finances and staff. The other homes were unable to do that because their staffing level was inadequate. In 1989, the division has received a legislative mandate to equalize the care in the homes so that all homes have to provide the same type of care and have approximately the same type of staff and number of staff to provide that care. I'm almost fully completed with that equalization. There's one more step left to transfer one position from Sitka to Ketchikan, and then we will be done. Fairbanks last year received four nurses aid to be able to at least have some assisted living beds. They were in desperate need of assisted living and also of nurses' aides. When you have only residential and then you have skilled nursing, there is a middle ground where people don't need skilled nursing, but they also cannot live alone. So if you don't have that middle service and they need it, we would have to discharge them. And that's one of our greatest fears of the residents we have. But we have had to do that in the past. We have to temporarily transfer people out of the Pioneer Home because we do not have enough nursing beds available. So that's a temporary transfer until a skilled bed is available. The homes have waiting lists for assisted living and for nursing. There are, of course, no waiting list for residential services. The homes are very economically operated. We have, our budget has not increased very much since 1986, except for the basic increases from health insurance and labor costs and retirement benefits. That this year, it has come to a head. We are no longer to operate and function within our budget. We are requesting a supplemental and, of course, hope to get it. Otherwise, we would have to discharge residents. There's no other way to do that.
Can I break in there?
Sure.
Maybe once in a while when they have some. Is the governor supporting a supplemental for it? Do you know?
Yes. Our administration is supporting the supplemental. And one of the supplementals is still to fund a salary increase for nurses. We had a very hard time attracting and retaining nurses. That's a nationwide problem. It's not just us. Along with that, we had quite a bit of problem retaining physical therapists, occupational therapists. Our contract has a very hard time keeping dietitians, because we could not compete. So there has been a salary increase a year ago for nurses, which now needs to be funded. The Pioneer Homes took the philosophy that we will comply with the nationwide minimum nursing home standards. That falling below this minimum standard, we could not justify, and we do not want to subject our older Alaskans to a care less than that. So we are following the what we call in the industry OBRA standards. That's the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 87 and Federal Nursing Home Reform Act. That meant that all the nurses' aides within our facility need to be certified. They are now certified. And there's a number of other minimum requirements, including a lot related to patient care, patient quality of care. To accomplish that, we also need and have done this year and last year for the first time a little increase in staff education. It was very difficult if we do not have any funding, neither for travel and for education. But it is absolutely necessary. Good quality care is always based on the education and the knowledge of the staff. They have to keep up with modern technology and modern techniques. It's the same as a physician has to, so do we. And that goes from all the staff up to the administrators. There is a mandatory continuing education for nurses' aides and mandatory continuing education like infection control and CPR and fire and disaster safety. That's an area where I'm still hoping in the future to be able to continue to improve. We have another real problem in the state, and we are no exception from it. The Nursing Home Reform Act reduces the amount of medication you can use to calm people down. People who are very aggressive, and many of them are confused, have been given in the past some psychotropic drugs to make it easier for them to be handled. That no longer is allowable. So neither are restraints, chemical or physical restraints. What that has done is to have a lot of residents who are physically aggressive, and they have a behavior problem, which staff, other residents, have a very hard time to deal with. They're actually a danger to others and themselves. We do not have staff, nor do we have a possibility to place them anyplace else. We had hoped to place those in the Valdez Harborview Center, which is a division of Mental Health and the Health and Social Services, has operated. That's, so for right now, it has not been working. So we are looking and we are hoping to work together with Health and Social Services that we still have a possibility for those people, because we have a severe problem in the homes as a danger to other residents. The last part of the Pioneer Homes is maintenance and deferred maintenance. Last year, we had several very large unexpected expenses. We had our 8-year-old oil tanks, two of them, rust through after 8 years in Ketchikan. We had the skylight break in due to snow load in Sitka. So that type of maintenance plus deferred maintenance is adding up to a very large capital request this year. In 89, we only had $500,000 for 6 homes. Most of that was eaten up as asbestos removal, especially in Fairbanks. In 90, we got $1 million. We are just trying to fix some of the real danger areas, which includes fire alarms, fire dangers, like a real poor stove in Fairbanks that has been installed now. As a division, I'm trying to work together with the private sector and also the other facilities within the state. And we'll try to continue to do that because we're all in the same service to our Alaskans, which is long-term care. The next is the longevity bonus program.
Chairman?
In the, yeah.
Lieutenant Baker.
Before we get off of that part, could you address the, I know it's a big issue with the seniors, the congregate housing. Because it, you know, if I heard you correctly, the residential area you're filled with gunnels with, and maybe you have empty beds in the assisted living area.
Is that we have empty beds in residential. The residential area in our homes are still, it's one room, and then most of them share a bathroom.
Right.
So it's not what people nowadays would like to have. If they can live in their own home or in a congregate housing and have their own little apartment, their own little bathroom, they will do that.
So that's really a preference, isn't it?
Yes.
That's my understanding as well, and much less costly.
It costs us, in the last time I did the residential section, is $1,900. I did the frame calculated. It's somewhere $1,900.
Uh-huh.
The cost, which includes, of course, you know, all the heating and food service. If they're indigent, it includes their medical care.
$2,000 a month? Basically,
yeah.
$2,000. Uh-huh. That's quite high.
It's $1,000. Have to give
and
you better figures.
How does that kind of relate to what it is within the home then?
If they rent their own home, yes, they get the tax exemption. They may have payments. You have heat. It may be less expensive to live in their own home, but you also do not have emergency nursing care available to you. You don't have somebody who's watching over you. You don't have mail service. You don't have handicapped accessible housing. It is better for them to live outside. And like I said, we support that. It is those people either because of fractured hips or any other physical handicap or because of confusion who need the assisted living. But then they need that one person there to aid them. And that's something which is necessary.
And the other question I had related to staffing, because as I look through these documents, it looks like that there's a little, based upon the number of residents, a little disparity in the staffing levels between the homes. Is there a reason for that?
I've looked at each in a different home. You can see, you may see it in the back. You have a staffing chart. It's behind the written material. The greatest difference is still in Ketchikan, who have 9 nurses aides, and Juno has 11. 9 nurses aides for the total home is insufficient to take care of somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The other discrepancies you may see is that there is a larger population of residential in the home who does not need the staff. What I have done, I have looked at each home as approximately 44 to 50 nursing residents, Sitka, Palmer, and Fairbanks. Anchorage has 2 units of 45 nursing residents. So all these units are the same size. So they all have between 21 and 23 nurses aides. So that's how we did equalization. Then the other staff, which is in a higher ratio, because Anchorage, for example, has a lot, very much larger residential population. You still need health service and food service. I also, Sitka is still, on this particular paper, is still has a higher number of staff. In the meanwhile, we have at least 5 vacant positions there. We have 2 people laid off. Because Sitka has such a large number of vacant residential rooms, we, during the last year, have reduced the staff. And one of those positions will now be transferred to Ketchikan. So even though they have 92 people on the books, they have 2 were laid off on just last week, and there are 5 vacant positions on top of that. So.
Thank you.
Barbara, what outlying villages does Fairbanks Pioneer Home serve? How far out is it?
The whole northern area. Including we get inquiries from Barrow. I think that's why the reason of Fairbanks Home always has been one of the longest, and it is the longest waiting list, because it serves a large area.
If I may continue to turn, what is the approximate ratio in Fairbanks between residential and the other 2 types of care? Are there any empty beds in residential in Fairbanks?
Nursing is 46 plus 3 infirmary rooms. They have 4 assisted living beds only, because that's because of staffing. And then they had 56 residentials, 52 residential now, because 4 of those were converted. And the number of vacant beds this month, it varies. I don't know exactly.
Thank you, Chairman.
Chairman, thank you. Barbara, at this time, in any of our homes, are we below the federal mandated standards?
We still have some physical areas to...
Could you give me an example?
We have in one area, we have a fire alarm system which is not interconnected between 2 floors. And in another area, our rooms are a little too small, and we will have to update some of our furniture. Licensing surveys us the same way as they do the private sector under those OBRA regulations. And in this last survey process, we have received deficiencies in 1 home in social services. We only have 1.5 social workers for the 200 residents, and that's insufficient in Anchorage. So we are trying to find some money. Right now we're doing it under contract. We're trying to find somebody to make at least 2 full-time people out of that, and we're in the process of doing that. Another one, we have received deficiencies in recreation area, recreational activities. And that's not what we call, you know, recreation, you go out and play ball. That's to keep a person stimulated mentally, physically, and so they have a quality of life and can enjoy it. We have received deficiencies in at least 3 homes, and 2 homes because of, we didn't have a staff person. We couldn't hire them. We tried, but there was nobody on our register, and it was very, very difficult to keep qualified staff.
One more question, Mr. Chairman, if I could. Are you able to contract out a lot of your services?
Okay. If you look in the back of your packet, I included a 3 pages of contracts. We have approximately 40 contracts. We contract out our physician services and pharmacy services, and then speech, occupational therapy, and we contract that out. We contract medical records out. And then our largest contract is food service. We contract the management of food service in all homes, and in Juneau we also contract the labor. That contract definitely will go up. There's no question about it. The present contract is about, I think, $3 less a day than the closest contractor was when we bid it last time. And we were notified that that contract is not going to stay that low.
Thank you.
How many beds short overall would you say we are, including nursing and assistant? How many more beds do you need, according to your waiting list or what you know is out there in need, sir?
There are 2 forces here. One, of course, the private sector has vacant nursing beds. The other area is we could use assisted living. So some of our nursing residents may be able to move back into assisted living, not requiring skilled nursing care. We serve a lot of the residents in the state who neither can afford private sector full pay, neither do they qualify for Medicaid, either because they have a little too much monthly income, or they have a diagnosis which doesn't fall under Medicaid. So, the question on how many more nursing beds we could fill, I'm quite sure easily another 30 beds. Is that what the state wants to do? And that's a policy decision, I think, which has not been made or is being made. We definitely could use more assisted living, because that's where the real need is on the outside. Mm-hmm. We get constantly people who, younger people who take care of a parent, who have a real hard time, mostly because people are confused, Alzheimer's and dementia related.
Mr. Chairman, that kind of goes towards the question that I have. Would it be possible to move some of the folks into congregate housing and free up and create additional beds for that to provide that kind of care?
We have the housing. We have the rooms available in the residential. They're vacant. It just needs the funding to staff it.
Okay, so if we had the staffing, then we could provide for, there wouldn't be a, there wouldn't be a shortage of bed space. It just needs the staffing to support it.
Right. And there is a statute change now requiring a need to move into the home. We're going to have more and more vacant rooms in residential.
So it's not the physical facilities, it's just the staffing to support them.
Right. All remodeling which has been done in the homes in the past has been done with the thought process in mind to qualify in the future for Medicaid, Medicare, and also to assure that we have call belts and those things available, because that's what's necessary to operate an assisted living section in the home.
All right, maybe we can go on to along there.
In the back of your handout, there should be. Do you have one more out there? I will make sure you get another one. There are two charts like this. I think it's easiest to see on these charts. where we are right now and how fast it will increase if we continue the same way. The bottom chart shows in 1991 we'll be up to 60 million and it will be in 2000 up to 85 million if it continues to be 65 years of age and $250 a month. The one up on top just tells the number of recipients. The sharp increase, of course, was the year of the change from residency from 25 to 1 year. That's in 85. Following that, you'll have a which we send out to many representatives or senators so they know how many recipients there are in your district. It is not the most accurate one. We are changing right now into a new computer program to keep better track of our payments and also to keep better track of any changes, including possible fraud control. We will be able in the future to have zip codes rather than election districts. Since election districts, anytime somebody changes an address, we don't get that information. It will be very difficult for us, but we will still look into it, so we can give you that information. But zip code can be quite close. The next one tells you up to date this year what our expenditures are. We're quite close in our estimates. What has happened on December 1st, we went to a retrospective payment system. So instead of paying on the 1st of December for the month of December, we will now be paying on the 1st of December for the month of October. What that does, it helps the Alaskans, and it also helps us in administration. People no longer have to tell us ahead of time, I may be gone, I may not be gone next month. So on the 1st of the month, they used to have to tell us, I will be gone, or they didn't know, then they forgot to tell us. And it was a tremendous amount of extra work for us, and we don't have that staff to do that. So now everybody gets a stub, and this was the first month they got the stub, this in the beginning of this month. It asks the question, have you been out for more than 15 days this month? Were you in a nursing home? Were you in Alaska? And then they say, you know, yes or no. But it'll tell us, okay, you were here during the month of January. So we know for sure that person qualifies. So that stub comes back to us in February up to the 15th, and then in March we will pay them for January. There will be never any question that they will have been gone or not gone. It will be very clear. The reason why we are asking on the stub, have you been gone more than 15 days? Because the months before they could have been gone 16 days, and now 15 days, it's up to more than 30, and they will lose a bonus. Part of the people we have been, I think we surprised them a little bit by doing that. People thought as long as they got their stub in by the 15th of the month, the next month, they were okay to receive the bonus, even if they were gone 35, 40 days. That no longer is possible. It wasn't possible before because the statute doesn't allow for it, but it still happened because we heard it during the regulation hearings. And now they can't do that any longer. So we expect some savings just from that. And we also expect savings from the change in the loss of bonus. There is a schedule when they're gone from 30 to 45 days, they will lose one bonus. From 45 to 75, two bonuses, and from 75 to 93 bonuses. So there's an additional savings. Plus a retroactive payment will save us quite a bit, around $2 million too. And we're already showing that in January, in our January payment. We went back below 19,000 warrants.
Well, I think the question I have in my mind is that in the governor's budget, he recommended a 5% cut in this program. And our understanding is that will continue for 5 years in a row, a 5% cut. Is that the administration's position? Is that how they want to deal with it? Or is the administration looking at things like Senator Gratula's annuity program? Or what is the position of this administration on this program for its future?
Yeah, I think that question I would have to leave up to the administration. There are many different possibilities and bills out there in the past, and I think the administration has to, the commissioner's office has to respond to that question. One last statement. We are right now in the process to put out a request for proposal to redo the whole computer program of the longevity bonus program. Our old one was in a very poor, old, outdated language. We temporarily rewrote it into COBOL, but we now are in the process. We had the money, received the money last year. That will completely streamline it. It already had saved quite a bit of money just in the printing process, from 16 hours down to 4 hours just printing checks. So all that together will save us not as much money, but also time, and will make it more efficient. And that changeover in the computer program will be finished by 1st of July. It will give you information which we have, which was requested from us, from the legislators, many times, such as how many citizens and various questions, age group, and how many people were here maybe 2 years before or 5 years before, only 1 year. We're trying to incorporate those into the new program.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara.
Thank you.
Very administration want to make any, anyone else?
For the record, I'm James Fox, Deputy Commissioner, and I've worked with the Supervisor Pioneer Benefits Section as well as the older Alaska Commission. I wanted to make two comments, one about Pioneer Homes and the other about the longevity bonus. With the Pioneer Homes, we're in the process statewide in that field of a transition that's affecting homes. Originally, they were set up essentially as retirement homes or rest homes years back. Nursing service was almost unknown then and gradually became or came to be offered as just an ancillary service for residents who became sick or ailing. It has, its flavor has changed now to the point where the almost 100% of the demand on the homes is for some type of either assisted living or skilled nursing care. Up to this point, roughly half of the beds, 600 plus beds in the home, have been licensed as nursing beds. And as Barbara mentioned, we've got an extensive waiting list for that service. And we've gone ahead and with existing staffing, we've converted some of the residential beds to assisted living, again, to meet not only the outside need, but the need of a number of residents who are in home and have just aged in place. And we've actually gone from independence to needing the assistance back where they are. What to do with the balance of those beds as we actually incur more and more vacancies in the residential section is a policy question, I think, that needs to be addressed over the next year or two or three. As Barbara mentioned, there are a number of vacancies in nursing beds in the private sector. One of the difficulties there is that the pretty much the only people in the state who can receive long-term residential care either are those who are poor enough to qualify for Medicaid or wealthy enough to pay for it on their own. That leaves a large number and an increasingly large number of moderate to low-income seniors who have no long-term care resource. They have a moderate amount of income that puts them above the Medicaid standards for residential care. And if they cannot get into a Pioneer home, then they have a choice of either making do with community-based services, such as they can, depending on their family, or leaving the state, and quite a number of them do leave the state. What to do about this issue and how the Pioneer homes fit into that area is something that I think needs to be addressed, not only within the department, but within the service community from statewide. The other comment I had about the longevity bonus, it's been talked about for several years. It's an increasingly expensive program. It's currently increasing in costs about anywhere from 5 to 7% a year, depending. Currently, it's fully funded at the 250 level for all one-year residents 65 and up. It would be in excess of $60 million in addition to the increasing cost of the whole harmless provisions, which are budgeted in the Health and Social Services budget. Total cost probably in 92 would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $70 million. And that increases 5 to 6% a year. 3 years ago, the annuity bill passed two ways to reduce the cost of the program. You pay out less money or you pay out the same money to fewer people. One proposal that's in currently is a combination of those two. It raises the age limit, which means fewer people, and it also reduces the amount of the bonus per recipient. I would, judging from the governor's speech, I would expect that he would look favorably upon the version of the annuity program. That still leaves, if the annuity bill passed as introduced, or even if it passed as it passed about 3 years ago with the stair-stepping provisions and other things, it does not affect an immediate savings. The savings under the annuity bill start off gradual and climb over time, but it's over quite a bit of time. In fact, the SB 56, when it passed, I think, actually had a net increase for the first year because of the administrative cost of actually establishing an annuity program built on top of very small savings in the grant area. At this time, it's generally supportive of long-range solutions to the program, which would include the annuity bill. We will continue to press for an immediate reduction in the cost of the program. The current proposal in the hopper is to reduce the, or to increase the age of entrance to the program to 67 and to reduce the bonus by about 5%. The bill that I have seen is flat one time. I don't know the process. As was mentioned, that one story was continue this for 5 years, 5% a year for the next 4 or 5 years. I don't know whether we'll seek to modify the bill or whether the plan long range is to either A, see what else comes out of the legislature, or B, introduce a bill again next year that does the same thing. End of my comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fox. I'm sure we, the session goes on here, we'll have a number of questions from the administration on this program and the Pioneer program. And I think we're all real concerned about where they're going. We want to make them efficient, but I'm going to say something a little more political, but I always believe that and appreciate your time, sir. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. I understand what you're saying. If you start from the premise that this program needs to be reduced, there are two ways of doing it. I have a personal question. Is this part of the administration's program on a targeting this particular program, or is this where the Commissioner of Administration has decided to cut within his budget?
One of the areas, yes, sir.
So it was the Commissioner's decision. Why did he choose this program as opposed to other areas?
He looked at the department overall. As I understand, the concept is if you reduce the overall cost of state government, the operating expenditures, he felt that seniors programs should not be necessarily any more exempt than any other. Why should they be exempt?
Why should they not be any more exempt than others? If you're concerned about the human value of helping people who are on a reduced income, who have additional needs, who have been in Alaska generally longer than the rest of us, who contribute a lot to this state, why shouldn't they be more exempt than any others?
Well, partially, the longevity bonus goes to everyone, rich, poor, and middle, who meets the age and one-year residency requirement. It is not an age-based program, and has not been. And in the sense that it is not needs-based, felt it was open to take a look at that, just as it would be any other statutorily based program that's not needs-based. The budget for the Pioneer Homes for an increase.
Well, Mr. Vice Chairman, this is probably not the time to get into this, but I would just like the commissioner to be aware that at least on the part of this representative, I will want to examine very carefully that particular premise from which he's proceeding. And I think that's a major policy decision for the legislature to make. And I will, before proceeding further with the argument, need to be convinced that that is the right decision to make. And so that's number one. And number two, I would appreciate when we do take up that issue, if the commissioner would give us an alternative way of cutting the budget in his department, leaving the longevity bonus program intact. We'll need to have an alternative. I don't want to be diverted from the other possibility that we may very well leave the program intact and look at other more difficult areas to cut in his budget. And I'd appreciate you conveying that to him.
I'll do so.
Thank you.
Does anyone else on the committee? Representative Brockman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been studies on needs based?
There have been some studies.
Income
level. Legislative Affairs did a study, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago. Governor Cooper, when he first came in, made a needs-based proposal, which met with relatively immediate and sudden death. There's some general opposition. Turning the longevity bonus into a needs-based program. They feel, in a sense, it's an entitlement that is based on status as resident, long-term resident of the state, and age as opposed to financial need. The amount of savings obviously depends on where you put the cutoff point, where you define need. I've argued some years ago when Stove Oil Inn was $70 to $80 in some villages. I don't want to know what it costs now in those areas. And it also would address the quality of life issue for people who have enough to eat, to pay their rent. But it makes the difference on whether they can eat out occasionally or buy the grandchildren presents or every couple of years make a trip to see the kid or whatever. Basically, just nice to have, but it neither appreciably improves the quality of life nor meets any particular need. I don't know exactly what that is, but one of the advantages to setting an income level, a fairly high income level, is that you're targeting a group then which is not entirely based upon age. And if that's done in conjunction with the feds and their reimbursement assistance programs, they will encourage that to some extent. I think the feeling is being age 65 is a bit broad to qualify as a target group. But once at that point, it becomes a supplement, a targeted supplement to a specified group and does not adversely impact public assistance benefits, such as Medicaid. This group is a really big concern, but that's, there again, that generally falls in most people's minds in the same category as needs-based, and there's an overall objection, I think, both among the recipients of the program or the beneficiaries of the program, and others to do anything which would make it look needs-based.
Plus the administrative costs would go
up? It depends on how you did it. If you did just a flat income and didn't concern yourself with resource verification, it gets a little easier.
start our regular meeting in 60 seconds. We're going to be on
I don't want to be diverted from the other possibility that we may very well leave the program intact and look at other more difficult areas to cut in his budget. And I'd appreciate you conveying that to him.
I'll leave you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else on the committee? Representative Brockman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been studies on needs-based for longevity program and what age
there have been some studies.
Income
level. Legislative Affairs did a study, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago. Governor Cooper, when he first came in, made a needs-based proposal, which met with relatively immediate and sudden death. There's some general opposition, kind of pervasive opposition among seniors, to turning the longevity bonus into a needs-based program. They feel, in a sense, it's an entitlement that is based on status as a resident, long-term resident of the state, and age as opposed to financial need. The amount of savings obviously depends on where you put the cutoff point, where you define need. I've argued on occasion that to me a rational approach would be to make it income-based, which most people tend to feel is need, but that you put the income level at a height where it not only takes care of those who have a need for the program, but in my mind I think particularly of the elderly and villages where I was working in that area, took a barrel of stove oil for a month for room to pass your house. And I've got a great deal of sympathy for those people and their need for income in those areas. That was some years ago when stove oil then was $70 to $80 in some villages. I don't want to know what it costs now in those areas. And it also would address the quality of life issue for people who have enough to eat, to pay their rent. But it makes the difference on whether they can eat out occasionally or buy the grandchildren presents or every couple of years make a trip to see the kid or whatever. Basically a quality of life. And then you have that group where it's just nice to have, but it neither appreciably improves the quality of life nor meets any particular need. I don't know exactly what that is, but one of the advantages to setting an income level, a fairly high income level, is that you're targeting a group then which is not entirely based on age. And if that's done in conjunction with the feds and their reimbursement for the assistance programs, they will encourage that to some extent. I think the feeling is being age 65 is a bit broad to qualify as a target group. But once at that point, a supplement, a targeted supplement to a specified group and does not adversely impact public assistance benefits such as Medicaid, which for this group is a really big concern. But that's, there again, that generally falls in most people's minds in the same category as needs-based, and there's an overall objection, I think, both among the recipients of the program and the beneficiaries and others to do anything which would make it look needs-based.
Plus the administrative costs would go up?
It depends on how you did it. If you did just a flat income and didn't concern yourself with resource verification, it gets a little easier. You could make it quite complex.
Thank you.
Any other members of the committee? Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brock, for taking out your time to come. Are we done then with that? Could I see you 2 seconds?
Sure.
We'll start our regular meeting in 60 seconds. We're going to be on telephone.